For the first time since the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. became a federal holiday in 1983, this year's observation will be ushered in by nature's fireworks in the form of a total lunar eclipse. Let's take heed with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, we're taking heed because the forecast calls for some pretty frosty temperatures, but if you wait, it'll be a few years before you can catch the next one.
Yeah, that's right. So it's probably a good idea to take advantage of this opportunity if the weather really cooperates for us to see this total lunar eclipse. Fortunately for us, all phases of this total lunar eclipse will be visible. The eclipse actually begins with what's called the penumbral phases of the eclipse, and that's when the moon actually begins to slide into the outer portion of the Earth's shadow. How many people have ever actually seen the Earth's shadow? It's kind of tricky to see because it actually happens on the backside of the Earth, the dark side of the Earth, if you will. But because it's on the dark side of the planet at night, we can't see it. The only way we actually know it's there is when something passes through the Earth's shadow. The moon, in its orbit of about 28 days, can occasionally pass through the Earth's shadow, and that's when we have a lunar eclipse. A total lunar eclipse occurs when the entire moon passes through the Earth's shadow, and the portion of the eclipse where we see the greatest amount of color comes during what's called the umbral phase, when the moon passes through the deepest portion of the Earth's shadow, and then we can see some color on the surface of the moon.
But what generates the color?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because you'd think if it's dark, where is there any light at all? Well, when this actually occurs, there is some stray light that comes through the Earth's atmosphere and does get scattered into the shadow. But the blues are all absorbed by the shadow, and what happens is only red is left.
More specifically, would you describe it as a blood red hue?
And indeed, I certainly would not describe it that way. The hues can range from a coppery color to a reddish color to a brick red color. Blood red actually comes out of the popularity of that word as used by an author writing about a series of eclipses a few years ago in which the term blood red was used.
How about the other popular description for this eclipse? Super.
Oh, the one that I really dislike the most? Yes, the super part. Yeah, well, this refers to whether or not the moon is at its closest point to Earth, its perigee. And when the moon is at its closest point, you know, these perigees often get described as an opportunity to see a super moon, indicating that the moon is going to appear much larger than it normally appears. Yes, we can use measuring devices of various kinds to figure out how much of an angle the disk of the moon subtends in the sky. But if we try to measure the moon when it's down close to the horizon, we'll see this artificial effect taking place of the moon appearing large because it appears near objects of known size. There's a very well-known optical illusion phenomenon that takes place that allows us to see the moon as appearing really, really big when it's down close to the horizon, although it's never really changed size at all. Once the moon moves higher in the sky, it assumes its normal size that we typically see.
Any chance this eclipse could adversely affect a growing cotton crop on the moon?
I think not. The gravity of the moon as it is and the gravity of the Earth are not going to affect the plants that have been lodged aboard the Chang'e 4 spacecraft that's sitting on the far side of the moon. Chinese engineers and scientists installed into the vehicle sitting on the surface of the moon a chamber that is holding three different types of seeds. Cotton seeds, potato seeds, and the seeds of another laboratory-type plant called Arabidopsis. The idea being, let's see what would happen if we put these plants on the moon in a growing medium to see if they'll sprout. And indeed, what's happened is that the cotton seeds have sprouted, but the other two haven't. But it's possible they could come up. So it's actually kind of a milestone, the first time that a plant has actually sprouted on another body.
We have a moment left. In addition to the lunar eclipse, what else is available to be seen with a dark sky this week?
In the evenings, we have not only Mars over in the southwest after sunset, easy to view with no problem at all, but we also have the winter constellations looking great in the evening sky. There's that circle of constellations that surrounds Orion the Hunter. Orion is easy to identify because of the seven bright stars that make up the body, three stars across the belt, two stars at the shoulders, a star at a knee, and a star at an ankle make up that human shape. But around Orion, we can also find Taurus the Bull up to the northwest. Directly above Orion is the pentagon shape of Auriga the charioteer. Above his left shoulder, we can easily see the Gemini twins with the two stars that are almost equal in brightness. And then down to his lower left, we can see the brightest star of the winter sky, Sirius, as part of the two hunting dogs of Orion, Canis Major and Canis Minor. If you happen to be up early in the morning, you're in for a real treat this week. By the 22nd, you'll find Venus and Jupiter right next to each other in the sky. But if you continue observing in the mornings before sunrise, you'll see how Venus is continuing along its path, heading around the sun. And by next week, we'll have the moon joining them as well.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk. Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. You can hear more of our conversation at whyy.org.